commence on the Senate Committee on Environment and Land Use. For the audience, we've got four bills on the schedule today. Senate Bill 125 is taken off the agenda. We're not going to get to that. I understand that a number of people have come here to discuss Senate Bill 170, and I really want to give special attention to people who drove some distance to come and testify. So when we get to that bill, it will be my intent to have an initial introduction of the issue, and then we'll immediately allow the people to come and testify who drove the longest distance. It's my understanding that one of the gentlemen will immediately drive to Sacramento after we're done with this hearing, so we better let him get an early start. So we'll get to that very soon. I think the other two bills on the agenda, Senate Bill 179 and 185, may not present any controversy, so we'll take a brief introduction on those bills, and if there's any controversy, we'll just table them. If they appear to be something that the committee's fine with, then we'll go ahead and just pass them and move them on out. So, but let's begin with the public hearing on Senate Bill 179.
Mr. Chairman, you have Senate Bill 179 in front of you. This bill is relating to fees assessed by the Water Resources Department. You should also have at the underneath your agenda a fiscal statement on 179, which just came out. Essentially, the gist of it is that they cannot specifically calculate if there's any decrease in revenue from this, but that they think it will be offset by a reduction in cost of the agency, so they don't believe there will actually be any fiscal. I think Adam Sussman's here.
Okay. Mr. Sussman, do you want to come up and introduce this bill for us, please?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Phil Ward, the Director of the Water Resources Department. I just wanted to slip up with Mr. Sussman for this first bill that's before your committee to introduce myself for those of you that don't know me, but as I look at the committee, I believe we're fairly well acquainted, and introduce Adam Sussman as the person from our office that will be working regularly here with the legislature, and he'll present the particulars regarding this bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Ringo and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Adam Sussman. I'm the legislative coordinator with the Water Resources Department, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide some testimony on Senate Bill 179. As you know, the state agencies are working hard on their regulatory streamlining efforts, and in that regard, the Department of Water Resources is always looking for opportunities to reduce paperwork and expedite processing. In 2003, the legislature approved a provision that actually reduced fees for certain water right transfers that were submitted in a digital format. And as you can imagine, getting this information digitally saves us a tremendous amount of time because we don't have to get the information and retype it and get it into our computer system. So what Senate Bill 179 does is simply expands this opportunity to provide this sort of fee reduction incentive by giving the Water Resources Commission the authority to reduce fees by administrative rule for certain actions.
It's all about efficiency.
Correct.
Okay. Anybody on the committee have any questions? Committee, I'm open for suggestion. I've got five people who are signed up to testify in favor of the bill. Is there anybody who is going to oppose this bill? Okay, unless somebody really wants to testify in favor of something that I think we're going to pass, I would like to forego the other testimony. Is that agreeable? Okay, I'm getting nods of the head. Let's move out of the public testimony, open a work session on Senate Bill 179.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 179 on the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any opposition?
So ordered.
And you'll carry that, Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to the next thing on our agenda then, which is Senate Bill 185. And be happy to hear from on Senate Bill 185.
Mr. Chair, Phil Ward for the record from the Water Resources Department. That's us again. So, Mr. Sussman, why don't you go ahead and give us Senate Bill 185.
Okay, thank you. For the record, Adam Sussman with Water Resources. I want to make three quick points and then get right to the heart of this thing. Point number one, many water users in the state of Oregon have more than one water right. They have typically what's called a primary water right and then what's called a supplemental water right in times of deficiency. So that's point number one. Point number two, since 1987, a water right holder has been able to transfer all or a portion of their water right, I'm sorry, lease a portion or all their water right in stream for voluntary stream flow restoration and as part of their water management activities. The heart of this is that in some cases when the primary water right is leased in stream, the supplemental water right remains on the property, and that raises a concern about non-use of that supplemental water right or whether that supplemental water right is subject to forfeiture. So Senate Bill 185 simply addresses this concern by modifying the water right forfeiture statutes to make it clear that non-use of a supplemental water right is excused non-use while the primary water right is being leased in stream.
Okay. Any questions from the committee?
I actually had one question.
Okay.
Does this vary at all by parts of the state? When you and I talked about the bill, I was essentially thinking of an experience I had working on a ranch in Madras where they did a lot of, you know, everything from, mint to, you know, various row crops and so on. Does this change much from that kind of classic view that I had as I remember that ranch? Is it different in different parts of the state? You know, are there variations depending on parts of the state?
Chair Ringo and Senator Shields, not really. I mean, this is a water management opportunity that's used throughout the state, both for that classic kind of operation, pasture operations, orchard operations, a number of various types of operations.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I was just, you know, I know what I saw and I know what I experienced. I was just wanting to make sure there were no unseen variants in this model.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anita Winkler, did you want to come up and testify?
Mr. Chair, last question.
Oh, sure. Maybe you better sit down for one second.
Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't think about this when you came around to talk to me about it. But just as far as application date, as I don't see an emergency clause, so this, in effect, would not take effect until the 2006 irrigation season, as it's currently drafted.
I think that's correct, Mr. Chair. Senator Byron, yes.
Follow-up question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Are there people out there now who would be in danger of losing their supplemental water right for being in their potentially fifth year of non-use that this possibly should have an emergency clause on it to make sure that it goes in effect for the 2005 irrigation season?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I suppose there could be, and certainly I think we have not interpreted the law to put those people in jeopardy to this point. This just clarifies our practice, but I certainly don't think an emergency clause would damage the legislation at all. We could do that on the House side, Mr. Chair, if you wanted, or Mr. Chair or Senator, if you wanted to instruct us to do that as well.
It seems to me that in a case like this where irrigation typically only happens during the summer months in this state anyway, and we're looking at a case that this is a true use of an emergency clause, because otherwise it does delay it for an 18-month time period before the bill would actually go and have practical use. So
I think that makes sense. So Senator Beyer, would you prefer to hold the bill and do an amendment on it in this committee or push it over to the House knowing that they could fix it there?
Mr. Chair, it's your discretion.
Well, it's a good point you raise. Why don't we just go ahead and hold it then? And to the committee staff, if you could get an amendment to this bill just adding an emergency clause, that'd be great.
We're certainly comfortable with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let's get Anita Winkler up here just for a second, though, so that we've covered all the testimony on this bill except for the emergency clause. Thank you.
Chairman Ringo and members of the committee, I'm Anita Winkler. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Water Resources Congress. And we're supporting the bill for exactly the reasons that the department explained. We don't know that this bill is necessary, but we have some concerns that it could get necessary, and we'd rather take care of it here than in a contested case or in litigation later on. This will protect districts as well as our water users who are leasing water in stream throughout the state, and we just think it's kind of a good preventive measure at this point.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, let's go ahead and close the hearing in on Senate Bill 185, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 170. Yeah, let's see here. Could Ann and Hannes and John Lilly?
For the record, I'm Ann Hannes, Director of Department of State Lands, and with me is John Lilly, who's the Assistant Director also at the Department of State Lands. I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 170. This bill proposes to make a number of changes to the state's removal fill law. Since 1967, we've administered the state's removal fill law, and it regulates dredging and filling in wetlands and waterways throughout the state. We also have this program in common with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency under the Federal Clean Water Act and Section 10 of the Rivers and Harbors Act. Our program predates the Federal Clean Water Act by about a few years. The reason we're proposing this bill is to bring greater clarity by more closely tracking similar exemptions under federal law. Over the last over the years since the removal fill law was passed, the legislature has fine-tuned this law from time to time, and it's sometimes it's made it more compatible with existing federal regulations, as it did just the last session with House Bill 2899. Senate Bill 170 continues this, and it proposes to align the state law with federal and state and federal laws and regulations with regard to regulating work in wetlands and waterways. Although it aligns Oregon's program more closely with federal law, in balance, it does not lower the bar of environmental protection. I should note that over the past year, we do have a removal fill technical advisory committee that has looked at this legislation. That TAC includes about 60 members representing all different types of interests in the state and federal natural resource agencies, consultants, local governments, public works and roads officials, public interest representatives, agriculture, forestry, and gravel extraction. And that technical advisory committee has met frequently over the last year. Some of the most important elements of this bill are defining exemptions for agriculture and other activities. We believe this is particularly important to the agricultural committee since there have been agricultural communities since there have been misunderstandings as to the effect of the current law on farming and ranching operations. We believe this is a bill, a good bill, but I don't expect you to do the same actions that you just did on Senate Bill 179. So I believe that we need to work to see what amendments there should be on this bill in order to gain the full support of the affected interests. And we've spoken to a number of those interests already, and we stand ready to work collaboratively to see if we can resolve any of the differences. So let me turn now to John Lilly to talk more about the specifics.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Department of State Lands. You have my testimony before you. I'd like to point out a couple of things that we provided for you attached to the basic testimony that I've given you. One is a listing of agricultural activities in particular that we would believe would be permitted would be allowed without a permit under Senate Bill 170 were it to pass, and also the kinds of activities that would require a permit if the bill were put into law as currently written. And then the last attachment to the testimony is the segment of the Code of Federal Regulations that from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Section 404 regulations dealing with dredge and fill permits under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. And I include that because, as Ann has already stated, what we've attempted to do is bring greater alignment between state law and federal law, particularly as it relates to the exempt activities under state law and federal law. In 1997, the legislature passed a measure of Senate Bill 207 that directed the Department of State Lands to examine the removal fill permitting process to do a number of things. One, to reduce paperwork, to eliminate duplication, to increase certainty and timeliness in the permit process, and to enhance resource protection. Passage of legislation in 2001 under Senate Bills 172, 957, and 529, and later in 2003 under House Bill 2899, continued the process of amending Oregon's removal fill law to meet these goals. The department continues to aggressively pursue these goals, and that's what brings us to you today with Senate Bill 170. It will continue to this improvement process by adding new tools to expedite the issuance of removal fill permits, by better defining when certain activities, particularly ag practices, are regulated, and bringing greater certainty and consistency between state and federal law. And in particular, let me get to the details of the bill. The bill brings state law exemptions closer to consistency with U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Section 404 regulations by, one, eliminating the 50 cubic yard exemption that currently exists in state law, eliminating the designation of essential salmonid habitat, allowing normal farming and ranching activities such as plowing, grazing, seeding, cultivating, minor drainage, and crop rotation, using the same definitions more or less as appear in federal law, allowing best management practices to be established by rule to conform with those EPA requirements under Section 404, and requiring the director to recognize that in promulgating best management practices by rule, that they recognize the importance of allowing established agricultural operations to continue without unnecessary restrictions. The bill would also allow for emergency removal of stream blockages in EFU zone lands without permit. It would exempt many activities from regulation if carried out under these best management practices on EFU land, and include such things as construction and maintenance of farm ponds, construction and maintenance of stock ponds, construction and maintenance of irrigation ditches, maintenance of drainage ditches, lining of irrigation ditches to conserve water, and the construction and maintenance of many types of water diversion structures, including siphons, pumps, head gates, wing walls, and a list of diversion facilities, and all the appurtenant structures that go along with making those structures functionally work with irrigation ditches. In addition, construction and maintenance of temporary seasonal dams or weirs for irrigation would be exempt, as would construction, maintenance, and reconstruction of farm roads, and any activity described as a farm use in the farm use law, ORS 215-203, that occur on converted wetlands. And just to round out this detailed conversation here on what is included in Senate Bill 170, I continue to say that some exempt activities, regardless of their zoning, would be maintenance of emergency or emergency reconstruction of dikes, dams, levees, tide gates, groins, riprap, breakwaters, and causeways. In addition, the bill would continue to exempt non-motorized projects involving less than one cubic yard and not more than five cubic yards in a single stream per year.
Are those specifications set forth in the bill itself, or are they set forth in rules that the bill essentially brings in?
Mr. Chair, these specifications are established in the bill itself.
I see. Okay.
And then finally, just a few more items to cover here, Mr. Chair. And it's a key provision here that we put into this bill. The bill would allow for an expedited permit known as a general authorization to be granted in certain circumstances that does not require prior notice to the department. This is a kind of a general permit that we would inform operators that they could make use of this permit, They would not need to make an application, but they would be noticed through an education process of the need to follow certain best management practices. Another provision of the bill deals with allowing the Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of State Lands to enter into an agreement to issue and enforce water quality permits relating to placer mining. And then finally, two more, allowing for the director to establish certain instances when on-site compensatory wetland mitigation need not be considered. Current law that was adopted in House Bill 2899 gives a preference for on-site compensatory wetland mitigation prior to going off-site. We believe that there are certain circumstances in which it doesn't make good sense to require an applicant to even go through the process of heavily evaluating whether they can do their mitigation on site or not. We'd like the opportunity to define those circumstances in rule and then make the process a bit easier in that regard. And then finally, a housekeeping measure, I guess, to modify the program reporting requirements that currently exist in state law that would give us the opportunity to report on a biennial basis the results of this program rather than on an annual basis, and to update the information that's required from those reports so that it reflects the current situation under the today's program that we operate under current state law.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Mr. Atkinson?
Next page, number 8. If I buy a ranch that's got a pasture on it that's been fallow for 7 years, does that mean that I just bought a ranch where the pasture's been abandoned?
We don't know that, Mr. Chair. Senator Atkinson, if you wanted to go out and plow up that pasture and it was a converted wetland and it had been left abandoned without any use whatsoever, and it returned to having all the characteristics of a wetland, you would need to get a permit to do that. If, however, it remains as a converted wetland, which is under law today, means it had been drained or diked prior to 1989, then you could indeed go and continue to manage that pasture, reseed it, plow it, what have you, without need for a permit.
Mr. Chair, a couple more. So if a cow is on it, it's not abandoned, even though I haven't plowed it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, that's correct. It is not abandoned.
Well, if this went through, then I, at least under that bullet item, I would have a bunch of farmers in White City that would be in violation of the law.
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, I'd like to know more about the specific circumstances you're referring to.
How do you police this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, would police it through compliance monitoring by staff in the field and by complaints from the community.
So if I didn't like my neighbor, I could complain and just give him a DSL headache that he's never had before.
Chair, Senator Atkinson, yes, the complaint would be received. We do evaluate the complaint based upon the veracity of the complaint. In other words, what is the resource that's being threatened? What is the activity that's being conducted? And then triage that to determine how quickly it needs to be responded to.
Okay, but it's still, if that's under the assumption, if that's under the planning, someone's got to pay those lawyer bills, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, yes, if there were a complaint that led to an investigation, then the property owner would need to do some, either present themselves as their own representative to the department or retain counsel or an expert in the field.
Do you want to comment on the case that is at the Court of Appeals that could be related to this bill, or would that be inappropriate?
Since we're in litigation, I don't think that would be appropriate at this time.
So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Senator Shield.
Well, I was fascinated that Senator Atkinson picked up on number 6. He's obviously read the whole list. I see these as illustrations. Are there any other fascinating illustrations among 1 to 12 that you'd like to comment on? I mean, these are just illustrative. They're not by any means comprehensive. I'm just fascinated by some of them. I mean, what would the process look like? I mean, Senator Atkinson has a lot of experience with farming down in his district. So does Senator Beyer. I don't see a whole lot of that in my urban district, okay? So I'm trying to catch up with you. And obviously, like if I just pick number four, a farmer isn't going to just dig a new ditch through an undisturbed wetland, as simple as this sentence makes it sound. How's this new law different from the old law? I guess it's kind of what I'm saying. Or is it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields.
Am I missing something totally?
In this respect, that activity is regulated today, and if this bill were to pass, it would continue to be regulated. It is what makes it regulated is the impact to an undisturbed wetland area.
Okay.
And that you can differentiate that from the list of activities that would not require a permit, in that for the most part, as you look at those, you see that those are continuations of existing practices and under an established farm activity or farm operation or agricultural operation of some kind. And I think the crux of this bill in a nutshell, particularly as it relates to the agricultural exemptions, is to realize that there are activities that relate to agriculture and ranching that are already going on in the landscape that have made their initial impact, and that they should be permitted to continue without regulation, except in the circumstances when they begin to impact areas that have not yet been disturbed or where they spill out into and affect other resources of a higher significance. But basically, continuation of existing practices is what this is directed to.
That's helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Senator Byron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a few questions myself. I guess I want to start with from what you just said. From my interpretation of what you just said, is that this bill doesn't change current practices. So I need to know, what's the problem you're trying to fix?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, actually there are some changes in current practices. For example, under the current law, we do regulate the construction of some push-up dams. We do regulate the construction of farm roads on EFU land if there are new facilities. We do regulate the construction of siphons and such in waters, in streams, and the reconstruction of some of those facilities. So there's not an exact fit, so to speak, between federal exemptions and state exemptions, and this bill attempts to kind of level the playing field, so to speak, between those two types of approaches to regulating waters and wetlands.
Would it be fair to say that what you can and can't regulate on ag land is in up for dispute, and that's actually why you're in court on a few different parcels, because you think you have the authority to regulate them, yet the current law says they're the agriculture exemption and a less than 50-yard exemption?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that's a matter of record, the public record, that the department is in a dispute. It does stem from a difference of opinion between the state and another property owner as to what activities are allowed under the law. In our view, bringing this before this legislative body is an opportunity to reset the game clock and get a clear understanding between all the parties as to what's permissible under as exempt and what is not.
Mr. Chair, may I continue? Thank you. One of my problems is that it seems pretty clear to me as a farmer and to other farmers what ag exemption and 50 cubic yard exemptions are. They're pretty clear. But the way I read this bill, it's much less clear what would then be regulated and what would be exempt. And in fact, it's quite worrisome that when you talk about putting best management practices into rule, some people may find comfort in that, but most of the people that I know and farm with, that makes them much more uncomfortable. They like it the way it is, where it's a blanket exemption for agriculture in statute and 50 cubic yard exemption in statute. They know it can't be changed by rule. So I guess that's not a question, that's just a comment. I'm curious to know why it is you are, and you mentioned it in your opening testimony, and I'm trying to find where it is in the bill now, that when it comes to the reporting back to the legislature and to the, I think it's just the legislature, but maybe it was to the land board also, as to why it is you want to take out a statute. I mean, first of all, it's currently it's annual, and you want to make a biennial report. But under current law, it also seems very explicit what needs to be reported, what sort of things need to be in the report. And your proposal is to delete most all of that detail and do more of a general report as to you want it, what you want it to be, rather than what the legislature wants you to report on. I'd like to know, have your comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, let me, which section?
Section 13 of the bill is the reporting section, and under current law, it's very specific what you need to report on. The things that you need to make your report on are very specific, and you delete all of that language and replace it with kind of generalized statements of what you guys think you should report on, and that seems to be quite a policy change.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I believe that what we are reporting, what we would not report on, although we could, we wouldn't be required to do so, are the volumes of permits. In other words, the not the numbers of permits, rather, but the amount of material proposed to be removed under each permit, and then a cumulative total for removals and fills and under the different types of permits that we would issue. Other than that, I think that the wording that we're offering is inclusive enough to cover all the pertinent aspects of the program, particularly as it relates to dealing with the processing times relating to the issuance of the various permits that we issue. In addition, we're going to continue to report on how many applied for, denied, granted, and renewed, which I think is important information as well. Not to say that those others couldn't continue to be reported. We just didn't think that it was as vital as maybe the current rule, current statute states.
Okay. And a couple more?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chair. Could you refresh my memory? This bill, virtually every section of it is repeated with the start of Section 3 and Section 4 are virtually identical except for the talking about what happened in 2001, 2003. Could you refresh my memory how this whole bill ties into the 404 process and the bill that was passed in 2001 requiring you to go to the federal government, make application to assume the 404 rules, and then come back to this body to get final approval?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, every other section, or as you point out, refers to statutory change made in 2001 under Senate Bill 172. Our thinking was that if we were going to change current law, we would make a companion change in under Senate Bill 172. That bill, Senate Bill 172, which is codified into chapter law at this point, would go into effect if and when the department was able to acquire assume Section 404 of the Clean Water Act under an approved program from the Environmental Protection Agency. We've been working on that. The last 2 years, we've been working diligently on a short-term project, which is called, or a shorter goal, I guess you would say, short-term goal, which is acquisition of what's called the State Programmatic General Permit from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which is also an expedited permit process for certain types of activities. So the next step for us is to continue the process of conversations with EPA to submit that application, which we have not done yet.
But before...
Senator Byron, can I just make a suggestion? And I'd be happy for your input. I kind of feel bad that Senator Johnson is waiting in the back.
I'm sorry.
And also, I'd like to get the folks from downstate to come and testify. And I have a feeling that Mr. Mr. Lilly and Ms. will hang around for the follow-up. Is it okay if
sure.
we take a break on their testimony? And,
sure.
And you'll stick around, won't you?
Absolutely.
Okay. I just see Senator Johnson really anxious to testify, and I don't want her to let her wait. And let's also, I think the note said you wanted to testify with Dale Buck as well?
Please, Mr. Chair, if you'll allow that.
Yes, I would.
We'll come back.
Go on for an hour. Thank you very much for your courtesy, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is the first time that I will second time I'll introduce myself as State Senator Betsy Johnson. And I'm here with Dale Buck, representing a number of interests that I have in my new Senate district. I have just become aware of this bill, and I'm going to defer to Mr. Buck, ask him to speak first, and then I have a request of the chair of the committee that I'd like you to entertain after he speaks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here. My name is Dale Buck. I live at 25590 Chinook Street, Cloverdale, Oregon, 97112. I gave your written testimony, and I shortened it up. And to what I've been told over the weekend that you might form a work group. And I want to encourage you to do that. And I've named on my written testimony some of the people that Tillamook Bay Habitat and Estuary Improvement District in Tillamook County needs to have good representation on there, and there are people here today that can talk to you about that. This bill sounds really fair, and I want to say I've seen these two sheets that require a permit and don't require a permit, and John Lilly has changed one word in there that caught my attention, and Mr. Lilly gave me and Greg Addington and Cassie, an intern, 2.5 hours of his time last Wednesday to hear my complaints about this bill, and I appreciate that, John. That's a long time, and I really appreciate that. And the thing is, this bill does some things, even though it sounds really good. And if you mark this bill up like I have, when you get through with 30 pages, you won't have but 5 or 6 pages left when you take out the double sections that Senator Beyer just mentioned. I'm not an attorney, and I'm certainly not a legislator. I'm a retired dairy farmer, and I couldn't figure out why change a few letters in one section, and then it repeats everything in the next. I think I've got to explain. I appreciate that. But if you take that out, then you're down to almost nothing. But here's where some of the problems are. The old definition for removal means the taking of more than 50 cubic yards or equivalent weight in tons. And in the present new definition, the Senate Bill 170 on page 3, it's any amount. You take one handful out, and you've got to have a permit. And so my farm friends, you know, say, wait a minute. Well, I used to could take 50 yards out to put on my farm road or my cow path. Now I can't take zero. And they don't like that. And so that's one thing that's been removed. The word impact has been changed to effect. I don't know how many times. I started to count them, but a lot of times. And I have trouble with the word impact and effect.
I'm sorry. Excuse me 1 second. Senator Burdick?
You happen to hit on a very sensitive point of mine. Could you tell me one place where that occurs?
Which is that?
Changing impact to effect.
Oh, that's... Start on page 3. It happens twice at the top of page 3. I wrote them down on another sheet at home, then I just got tired of keeping track of them.
Well, the reason I was a little bit alarmed, Mr. Chairman, is I thought maybe somebody was using impact as a verb, but they were not. So
okay.
It happens again on page 17, and it keeps going. Yeah.
Thank you.
Go ahead and continue, Mr. Buck.
Okay. And agricultural needs to clean ditches and sloughs that are behind tide gates and are open, not behind tide gates. In Tillamook County and up and down the coast and all over the state, we got countless little streams that come off of the hills under Highway 101 and go straight through some dairy farmer's pasture to a river. And that stream oftentimes isn't this wide. They plug up with gravel, and we need to get them cleaned out. Now, this bill says that in emergencies, you can clean that out. But in my conversation with Mr. Lilly, I said, what if the first flood in December, the little ditch fills halfway up? Do we have to wait until a second flood in January that it fills up and the water and sediment and gravel starts running out in the pasture? And he didn't want to give me a good answer to that. Personally, I want to clean it out when it starts to fill up. Another place in the bill, it talks about blockage or constriction, but those are the kind of things that we need an answer to, really. We need an answer to, and we don't. They have to give us a permit in 90 days if we apply. Well, if we don't have every jot and tittle, then they can ask for more information, and pretty soon this permit has gone on for 6 months or more. Not all of them, but those are things that can happen. 90 days is a fourth of a year. That's a whole summer or a whole winter. And to me, as an ex-dairy farmer, that's a long time. I don't want to wait that long. And so those are some of the concerns. Some others that I have are, I'm not sure about changing crops. We've got converted wetlands in Tillamook County, in Clatsop County, and in Columbia County that were pastures. They're now got hybrid populars on them. That's changing crops pretty radically. I'm not sure this bill allows us to do that, yet hybrid populars up to 8 or 9 years old are considered an ag crop. And there's things like that that are concerns of us farmers. The word abandoned for 5 or more years, serviceable within the last 5 years, are worrisome to me as an old man. 5 years, not very long. What does abandoned mean? What does serviceable mean? And those are in here. So really, in short, I know it, you got a lot of people that want to talk. I urge you to form that work group and try to choose a group of people that can work in that and work out some of these things that I personally see as maybe a problem. And I know a lot of my farming friends do, and Senator Johnson, who I'm happy to have as my new senator since Joan Dukes has went on to greener pastures, maybe she wants to work with us at, and we really appreciate her, and I appreciate her being here today. Those are some of my concerns, and some of them you've already covered.
Thank you very much, Mr. Buck. I think it's highly likely we will form a work group, and we really would like to address your concerns. I'd like to go ahead and hear from Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, I'm State Senator Bessie Johnson, Tillamook County. I now proudly represent my Senate district. I would like to work with the Chair and your staff and Mr. Buck to help identify someone from Tillamook County who might be able to sit with the work group and address some of the issues, some of the potential language ambiguity that Mr. Buck has touched on. I think, given that I'm just getting to know that district, that if Mr. Buck were to work with me to identify someone from the Tillamook Bay Habitat and Estuary Improvement District, that we could bring to you a candidate for the work group who is knowledgeable in these issues on the ground as far as their effect on agriculture, and somebody who understands how a work group functions and would be a productive and constructive member of the work group. And that was my request today.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you very much,
thank you for coming,
Mr. Buck.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'd like to bring forth Bob Caravan, please, Lynn Vanderlinden, and Keith Nelson.
First.
All three of you. We got three chairs up there.
It's a microphone.
Okay.
He can't hear.
Oh, okay. thank you for coming here today. I understand you came some distance, and I'll let whichever one of you wants to go first, but please identify yourself.
Bob Caravan, Bridgeview Winery.
Okay.
Southern Oregon, farmer.
Okay.
I'll just go ahead. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Lynn Vanderlinden, and I'm a sheep rancher in Cave Junction, Oregon. And I've also been a member of the Oregon Farm Bureau Removal and Fill Advisory Committee over the past few years. And our committee has tried to keep up with, we have bisected and dissected this removal and fill law and all the changes that they've been wanting to make to it, plus their administrative rules over the past 2 or 3 years. And as soon as we think we get one thing down, then they hit us with another. That way, we're just always off balance. We ask it for this, and it seems that they give us something in one hand, take it away with the other, and it's just become a nightmare. Now, the agricultural community itself is bipartisan, and this bill should be bipartisan. Not all farmers are Republicans or Democrats. Now, I doubt that any of you would disagree that agriculture is so important to the well-being and the economy of the state of Oregon. Now, and you're all learned people. Have you actually read this bill? Have you? You sound like you did, Senator. Good call. Did you really understand it? Did you? Do you think that a farmer such as myself sitting out in a sheep barn is going to pick this up and read it and go, now let's see, does this mean I need a permit to clean out my irrigation ditch? Do I need a permit to put my dam up again? I'm not really sure. So it forces me back to DSL to ask, do I need a permit? Oh, you're probably going to say, oh, no. And to be truthful, because I've been around this for 3 or 4 years now, this removal fill law, I've seen DSL use this as a weapon against agriculture, and for the life of me, I don't know why. I can't figure it. I just don't understand. The law was originally created to produce royalties for the Common School Fund from the aggregate industry. That's how it kind of came about. And we got sucked into it. Well, that's another story. It doesn't matter. But it's morphed into requiring a farmer who owns a fee-simple title and pays taxes on the beds and banks of a non-navigable stream or a converted wetland to go to DSL with their hat in hand for permission to use their own private property. And I just don't see why that should be. Or if you clean a ditch and throw the dirt in the perceived wrong place, you could get a penalty and a fine for that. You better not try to protect your stream bank from erosion without a permit. I mean, how are you supposed to farm? Do you think that DSL knows the best management practices, which, by the way, they plan to define by rule, of the land better than the farmer who works the place every day? And it's like any other business. You cannot logically apply the same rules to every kind of farming operation. A farm or a ranch can be hundreds of different things. You can't apply the same rules. And this is what DSL, one size does not fit all. But this isn't to say that we farmers should be able to do anything that we please. We are very much regulated land use-wise already. There's several state agencies. We're already regulated by the federal government by these same rules that Mr. Lilly and Ms. Hannes were referring to. We're regulated. And why should our competitive edge with other states and countries be further compromised by DSL's micromanagement and their hefty permit fees, which are going up again, fines and penalties? I would think that their time and our tax dollars could be better spent elsewhere. SB 170 doesn't help anyone but the bureaucracy, least of all the common school fund or the Oregon tax coffers, and I believe it needs to die. And before I end, I just have to make a couple little notes here. There are so many discretionary and judgment calls in there. The impact, the adverse effects, the reduced circulation. According to who? This is all discretionary, and somebody's got to say, well, that stream flow is being reduced. That's another thing about the impact and the adverse effects. And Mr. Lilly referred to a dispute between the state and a land and a private property owner. Actually, the dispute is between the state and a court of law. So it's not like...
Thank you, Ms. Vanderlyn, and I'm glad that you were frank with us and told us how you felt about this. I don't think we have any doubt. I have a question. Do you think that there needs to be any adjustment, or are you dissatisfied with the current system on fill and removal in any way? Or
I am dissatisfied with the way that DSL interprets the current law.
Well,
I am not dissatisfied with the current removal fill law.
I mean, you would be fine if we killed the bill and we didn't touch any part of this legislative session. You'd be fine.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I've been blissfully ignorant of this issue that others have been slaving away on this for probably decades, but in the testimony from John Lilly, it said that the passage of Senate Bill 170 would add new tools to expedite the issuance of the permits. Do you see there is that a good goal to expedite the issuance of the permits?
Doesn't sound good, but
he's shaking his head. No.
On all the agencies that are currently involved in the permit process would basically still be involved.
Well, I guess is what I'm. One of the things I'm trying to understand is some people have urged the creation of a work group. And I'd like to know your opinion whether it makes sense to have a work group, because there does need to be progress on this issue. They really do need to better define certain activities and come to agreement on some of these issues that you're concerned about, or whether you think this is so hopeless, don't even bother.
I've been on the work group and met with them so. Not to me, but that's just me.
Okay, well, let's hear from the other gentleman here then. Oh, I'm sorry. Any other questions? Okay.
I'd rather let Mr. Caravan go first.
Mr. Caravan, did you want to go ahead and make some remarks?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
I'd like to read the fast colleague's letter. Mr. Chair,
I don't think we have your remarks.
I turned it in 45.
1 minute. We'll be getting them shortly. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Senators, my name is Robert Caravan. I'm with Bridgeview Winery, Cape Junction, Oregon. And I'd like to bring to your attention Senate Bill 170, the fill removal bill. This is a bad bill and should be killed. I have spent over $400,000 of my money protecting myself as a farmer, and I know. I've been fighting this issue for going on 7 years. I feel that the DSL has spent probably $1 million trying to convict me. Mrs. Ann Hannes from the Department of State Land, DSL, has stated in their written yearly program that the DSL will repeal the exemption for activities customarily associated with agriculture, as well as other farming exemptions in the law that the state OSR, ORS 196-800 to 196-905. We farmers have to protect our existing farmland and use water to irrigate our crops from streams covered by water rights that date back as far as 1857. We also need to protect and maintain farm roads, crossings, stock ponds, drainage structures, underground piling, drainage contours, and ditches, groins, berms, dams, and engage in conservation practices to protect existing farms from erosion, destruction, and maintain the productivity of the same. Federal law requires these needs and allows farmers to conduct all of these activities on existing farms without a permit or worry of governmental interference. Since 1889, the Oregon Farm Bureau was fought to establish like agriculture exemption as those in the federal law, in Oregon law. Thanks to the Farm Bureau and other agriculture associations, such exemptions currently exist in Oregon fill and removal law. Now, prior Oregon legislatures have agreed that Oregon farmers should have the right and privilege to maintain, repair, and protect their existing farms free from the DSL's interference. Ann Hannes now wants to reverse this policy and rewrite the law. This rewrite would prohibit Oregon farmers from maintaining their existing farms in the future. In short, SB 170 would make Oregon's law regarding repair and maintenance of existing farms much more restrictive than federal law by limiting the exemption to less than 150 cubic yards. The farmers would no longer be making repair and maintenance decisions on existing farm, but the DSL official in Salem, who has no knowledge of agriculture, farming, operations, farm productivity, or our competitive forces. They are also trying to do away with the exemptions in HB 2082, which is the assumption bill. The assumption bill, as you should remember, was Senate Bill 172 in 2001 and SB 219 in 2003, and now is HB 2082 in 2005. The SB 172 passed in 2001, but had to be passed a second time in the legislature of 2003 before it became law. In 2003, the assumption bill's flaws, particularly as it relates to Oregon farmers and ranchers, became known, and that was partly because of my case. After DSL realized that it could not get the votes to pass for passage in 2003, the DSL pulled the bill from that session. The DSL has now resurrected it under HB 2082 in the 2005 House, but has not made any changes to remove the flaws as related to farmers and ranchers. DSL knew in 2001 that the farmers did not like SB 172. The various organizations that were against assumption in 2003 were the Oregonians in Action, the Oregon Farm Bureau, the Josephine County Farm Bureau, the Jackson County Farm Bureau, the Illinois Valley Water Rights Association, and the Oregon Farmers Association, and the Oregon Realtors Association, and the Oregon Home Builders Association. That was in 2003. I hope this will help you understand why SB 170 and the idea of assumption bill, HB 2082, needs to die. The original SB 172 did not have a sunset clause, and I think this is very important. Did not have a sunset provision to the detriment of the school funds. Due to this, DSL continued to spend school funds to push this misguided legislation. further with the enactment of Measure 37, DSL, now risk-taking claim being brought against this, comma, and the common school fund pays, end of quotation. I would like to point out that Senate Bill 170 page, in my bill, page 32 and 33, I don't know the actual bill, but it was facsimile. They could lose more school funds as the losing party, as it called for treble damages. So in 2005, I would ask that the legislature to terminate DSL's authority to continue wasting school funds in this poorly run legislation. I will come to give testimony, which I'm here. I also have, I won't read it, I've given you all a list of five different areas in Oregon, and each area the farmers have a different problem, and it's mainly according to the elevation of the land in that given area. And I come up with North Willamette, Mid Willamette, Southern Oregon, Eastern Oregon, and the Coastal Oregon farmers. And I think that's very interesting. And I would like to point out, somebody didn't want to bring that up, but this law, the fill removal law, 196-800 to 196-905, has been through the courts with three different judges. All three judges ruled in the favor of the farmer. And that the exemption exists, and you have copies of those, and I've supplied you copies with the judge's ruling, and it says, in essence, that the exemptions are limitless in coverage. So what they're doing now, after all this money has been spent, and by the way, the DSL is appealing those court judges. And so it's before three more judges. And if the appellate court rules in the favor of the farmer, it will be six judges in the state that say that the law is okay right now, just don't hide farmers. And I think we should, stop and think about this and stop wasting money. There's a lawsuit out that they're appealing, and this will strike you pretty tough, but $3.6 million, and we won it. And they're appealing it. And that type of stuff, I do not. And the reason of the lawsuit, I offered to cancel the lawsuit, but they had me criminally. And I can't stop a criminal trial. They can stop a criminal trial. And I wrote, you have a copy of the letter from the Attorney General, where they would not settle. They want to take me all the way and make a felon out of me.
Mr. Caravan,
that's what I'm here today.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Caravan, the lawsuit that you're referring to, not the criminal action, but the apparently a civil action, is that one that...
Civil action was the $3.6 million. And we went to the court.
Okay, but I'm sorry. Is that an action that you brought or the state brought?
I brought it.
You brought it, and you were awarded $3.6 million?
They said they wanted to appeal. The DSL spent the money to appeal. We answered it, and the judge postponed the parts of the proceedings where we substantiate our losses until the answer of the appeal. If the appeal is in the DSL's favor, I leave with my tail between my legs. If the appeal is in my favor, I go to court and start from there. They killed me. They killed one other farmer, over this stuff. It's just wrong what they're doing. And now what they're trying to do with this law is start a whole new bill, and then all of the work that the judges have done that we've paid taxes for is going to be thrown out, because then the judges got to start on a whole new law. because they've changed almost every iota of the law.
Mr. Caravan, would you leave the fill and removal statutes exactly as they are?
Yes, I would.
Thank you.
And I think it would cover the state.
Thank you. Senator Atkinson?
Thank you. Thank you all for coming all the way up. It's nice to see you, and it's nice to have you drive all the way here. Your last statement was my question. The fill and removal law, as you see, it covers the whole state, but under right now, today, there's two standards in Oregon. Is that right? There's a Josephine County standard and a standard for everyone else. Can
no,
you explain
what,
that for the committee?
The DFL says, but my attorney says there's only one law in the state. And whatever the law is, it's the law. We don't have laws for Southern Oregon and other laws for Northern Oregon. The law of the land is what the courts rule. And they don't like it, so they're appealing it. And when it comes out in the appeal, then we got to read it. I don't know what it's going to be. I think we're going to win. And they think we're going to win, or they wouldn't be changing the law.
Sometimes they try to cover themselves, Mr. Caravan. Anybody else? Any other question? Sir, did you want to testify?
Well, I'm Keith Nelson, farmer and chairman of the Josephine County Farm Bureau. And I'd just like the Josephine County Farm Bureau to go on record that we back their testimony of these two ahead of me.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you very much. Have a safe drive, whoever's driving to Sacramento.
I would like to leave this, if I could.
Yeah, you could give it to the committee staff right here.
This is that statement that they just gave you. And this is my lawyer's answer on how they're all covered in the law now.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Caravan.
Just get your microphone, Mr. Caravan.
Mr. Caravan?
See, it works, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I guess I'd like to take some of the other testimony for the witnesses, and then maybe we'll follow up with you, Mr. Lilly and Ms. Hannes. Let's hear next from Liz Frankel, please.
Thank you. I'm Liz Frankel, and I'm testifying at this moment for the League of Women Voters of Oregon.
Okay.
I would like to say that if you move to a work group, I would like to recommend that the work group be publicly noticed, and I think this would fit in very well with the Senate's desire for transparency, and particularly when it's as obviously divisive an issue as it is. The League has testified, and I have sat with work groups for the League with DSL. I have a long history with DSL, and I have opinions and understand pretty much what's going on. I think there are lots of things that are not clear that could be clarified with this bill. I'm anticipating the chair's question as to whether I think the bill should be killed or not. I think there could be advantages to a work group. The League would certainly like to be part of that. I do not necessarily think that just killing the bill at this time has a whole lot of pluses going for it. It maybe would save a lot of time and energy, because you never know with a work group what's going to come out or whether it's going to come out with anything. The aggregate stuff is a good example. But I would like to recommend, if you go to a work group, that we would like to be part of that, and I would like to recommend you consider the idea of having it publicly noted.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Any questions?
And I forgot to say that the League does have specific concerns with this bill, but I don't see any reason for bringing those up at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd like to know what your specific concerns are. I mean, it'd be interesting. I guess two questions, really. One, my first question was going to be, what is the interest of the League of Women Voters in the bill? And then specifically, you said you do have concerns
what
about
is
the bill.
Our particular interest has to do with water quality, and it has to do for support for water quality in this state in particular. And this bill fundamentally is about water quality. That's what the whole... That's the commonality for almost everything that's in this bill.
And would you? I'd like to hear what your concerns are, for the record.
I would like to apologize and say I'm not prepared to say I know that we're concerned to some degree about what the authority is of the transfer of authority from. Division or from DEQ to Division of State Lands, and how that would work and how that would fit in with the state's assumption of the Clean Water Act, which right now resides with DEQ. That's probably the most fundamental concern, and I know that that is a concern in the environmental community as to how valid that is. There's another bill you're going to be facing, Senate Bill 54. Is it 54? Yeah. Coming up on the 2nd of February, which authorizes some transfers and delegating authority. That probably would be the biggest concern right now. Does that help at all? I could go over... I have pages of notes, but I can almost guarantee you don't want to hear all that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Scott Ashcombe, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Scott Ashcombe, the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. We've submitted written testimony on the bill, asking for a few amendments, but I want to preface my comments by saying that I was part of the work group that generated the 1985 Wetlands Act. In those days, I was the Natural Resource and Environment lobbyist for the Oregon Farm Bureau. As I understand the Wetlands Act of 1985 from agriculture's perspective, I'm just going to give you an encapsulation of what I think the bill did, what the exemption section did in that bill. It exempted agriculture from from wetlands regulation. And by that, I mean jurisdictional wetlands regulation. You have to understand a distinction between what I call physical wetlands, which under the federal definition and the federal wetlands statutes is simply a damp spot on the ground. And under that definition, the Permissive Wetlands Act that was delegated to the state of Oregon to perform in the 1985 session, virtually the entire Willamette Valley would qualify as a wetland under that federal definition. It is really no more detailed than that. It's a damp spot on the ground. That would qualify virtually every acre of farmland, certainly in the Willamette Valley, and a lot of acreage in eastern and southern Oregon as a wetland. So with the idea that it would be impractical and it would not result necessarily in a no net loss policy for the state of Oregon to adopt a wetland protection law that regulated agricultural practices, agriculture was exempt from the 1985 wetlands law in the state of Oregon. And that's the law that this bill purports to change. It is a little confusing because there's a distinction between a physical wetlands, which is an actual damp spot on the ground capable of raising hydric plants, and a jurisdictional wetlands, which is a wetland that is under the jurisdiction of the Division of State Lands. There are two different things. A damp spot that can raise hybrid plants is a physical wetland. A jurisdictional wetland is a wetland that comes under the jurisdiction of the Division of State Lands for regulation and regulatory purposes. Agriculture was exempt in the 1985 Act from jurisdictional wetlands determinations for the purpose of regulation by DSL. So long as that farmland continued to be farmed with an accepted farm practice, and we intended by that in those days an accepted farm practice as defined in 215.203, it was exempt from wetlands determination so long as it continued to be farmed and did not lapse in its being farmed for 5 years or more. The legitimate question that the bill also addressed was, what about wetlands which were farmed wetlands, in the language of the 85 Act, that cease being farmed for more than 5 years and revert to physical wetlands? That really is what has caused the confusion that has led to this bill. About 10 years ago, the Division of State Lands staff, from time to time, would appear to be confused about the distinction between a physical wetland and a jurisdictional wetland. I know that you know, we're on a time frame here, so I won't go into any more detail. We've proposed some amendments here, the most important of which is on page 1, line 28. There's a little word there called "and." And this word did not appear in the 85 Act. It was inserted. I thought it was inserted in 1999, but I'm getting older. It might have been the 2001 legislative session. But what it did was that word "and" stated that the exemption for wetlands could be established if you were farming the land. And it's on the NRCS inventory of wetlands. Well, the problem is that the NRCS has not completed soil surveys in a number of counties in this state. It hasn't completed wetland inventories on very much acreage at all, even in the Willamette Valley. And so there are probably millions of acres of land that are not on the NRCS wetlands inventory at all. So making a prerequisite to enjoy the agricultural exemption from wetlands jurisdiction only contingent upon being on the NRCS list when the NRCS has not completed such a list is unfair, and it's not consistent with the intent of the 1985 Act. So we propose as an amendment, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to delete the word and replace it with the word or. That brings about a law that is consistent with the agricultural exemption in the 85 Act. We've also asked for amendments to clarify the word cultivation. We think it's very incomplete, and the word plow. If there is a work group appointed, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would certainly like to participate in that work group and work to get a rational bill. If the bill goes away, that's fine too.
Thank you
very much,
Mr. Eshcom. Do you think that a bill is desirable to clarify some of these matters, or should we kill it?
Very good question, Mr. Chairman. This bill contained some good clarification language. With regard to the construction of a reservoir, the 85 Act was defective in that it stated that a farm reservoir, that the maintenance of a farm reservoir was an agricultural practice, but it didn't include the word construction. That was really an oversight, but this bill does clarify that. That would be good, because then you wouldn't have to get a fill and removal permit to build a farm pond. So there are good clarifications in the bill. The amendment that I just talked about is an amendment which we believe are really necessary in order to bring the current law back to its original intent. So there are reasons to go forward. Yes.
If there was a work group, you would want to be on it.
Yes, sir.
This may be an indelicate question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is the? You represent the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. What is that, and how might their interests be different from the Farm Bureau's?
The Oregon Agricultural Alliance is a group of relatively large agricultural producers. Most of our members are large nurseries, although we do have a cattle operation. We represent Masami Farms, which is a large hog operation in Klamath County. And we're a general farm organization, although far smaller than the Farm Bureau. So we're not like the nurserymen in that sense, although many of our many of our members are production nurseries.
Do you see that your members would be impacted by this bill in a way different than the members of the Farm Bureau might be impacted?
I do not, Mr. Chairman. However, a number of my members are impacted by the way that the Division of State Lands is applying the agricultural exemption in agricultural regions now, and I can give you examples.
Does your organization have interest in the outcome of Mr. Caravan's court case?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no, we do not.
I don't mean a monetary interest. I mean, does it matter to you one way or the other?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, from what I've been able to gather from Mr. Caravan's case, the decision of the Josephine County Court was consistent with our interpretation of the agricultural exemption from the current wetlands law. And in that sense, our interests would coincide.
You think the Josephine County judge got it right?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I do. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Anything to follow up? Okay, thank you very much. I have a number of other people on my list, and I guess is what I'd like to do is make sure that everybody that is, quote, a normal citizen as opposed to a lobbyist, and sorry if that sounds derogatory, but it's not. If any of you who drove from a distance and aren't normally in this building would like to come up and testify, I'd like to give you that opportunity to do so. Yeah, come on up then, please. That wasn't offensive, was it? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes?
Don't worry about it. The lobbyists know that they are not normal people.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Hi, Dave.
Let's just run down. I'd like to get the three of your names before we start here.
Doug Rosenberg.
Okay.
Tillamook.
Tillamook. Okay.
Clarence Bolquist. Tillamook.
Okay.
And I'm Bud Ganger from Tillamook.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming and giving us your input on this issue. And whatever order you would like to go is up to you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. I am here representing the Tillamook Bay Habitat and Estuary Improvement District. My purpose is to describe who we are, what we do, what we try to do, and why we're here today. And Mr. Boquist and Mr. Ginger are also members of that group.
Could I ask you a question right off the bat? Do you see that there's a worthy purpose somehow circling around this bill somewhere that therefore deserves our attention, or would you dispatch this bill to?
Well, is that the only choices?
No, but I guess
our first choice would be somewhat different. But okay. Given those two choices,
no, it's not. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We think that we prefer to see this bill either totally changed or scrapped.
Okay.
And I could go on. I came prepared to talk for an hour, but I'll try to get that down to 2 minutes until you fly.
Thank you.
We formed a legal district after a number of years of being informal flood groups, primarily after devastating floods in 1996, which killed over 1,000 dairy animals and cost us $55 million in property damage. We're a self-tax district. We're a voluntary district. We've got about 60 members. We raise between $40,000 and $80,000 a year to put into local projects, all of our own money, no government money in that. And we prefer to do projects with input from agencies, but be the lead agency, because we can be 5 to 10 times more efficient than any project that government, particularly like the Corps of Engineers, can do. And we've participated with the Corps on hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of projects, so we have a lot of experience, and I'd love to describe how we do that, but I won't take the time today. We have managed quite a few accomplishments, but they're pretty much all Band-Aids running around trying to fix up parts of the system. We have two goals. It's to improve the habitat and improve the drainage. Fortunately, and I gave you in that packet a study called the South Sioux Study from Coos Bay, fortunately those goals go hand in hand, so we don't have to worry too much about trying to justify a habitat improvement project to drainage people or vice versa, because they do support each other. We have managed a lot of accomplishments over the years, including some that are ditch restoration projects that fit right into the description of juvenile coho side channels in that study you have. Excuse me. One particular project, we established or reestablished 800 to 1,000 feet of prime juvenile coho habitat side channel. On that project, we did get permits for it, even though it was somewhat questionable whether we needed them. Prefer to try to work through the system and get a working relationship going with agencies instead of always being at odds. That particular situation took about 6 months to get the permit. Should have taken 90 days or less. By the time we got the permit, we were in the wet season. Our costs more than doubled. We did more damage to the land, and our costs of restoring the land, which is part of the project, probably quadrupled. If we had been working under a simpler system with cooperative agencies instead of the overlapping contradiction that we have today, we could have done that job probably in a 90-day permit window far more efficiently than what we ended up doing it. That is one small example. Included in your packet there today are a couple of maps. They're the color maps that are back about 6 pages. That is a project which our group has designed over the last 8 years, which has received the number one blessing for a restoration project in Tillamook from the Corps of Engineers after a $3 million study. That's our project. Our contractors, our members designed it, our hydrologist designed it, our fish biologist has his input in it, and it's a good, balanced project that it opens up a fair amount of destroyed habitat. I'd love to go into details if you want to ask. And it also improves drainage at the same time. Unfortunately, with all the little Band-Aids we've been putting on the system, we've saved a lot of fish, we've saved a lot of flood damage, but we're like the little Dutch boy running around sticking his finger in the dike in one spot while leaks spring out beside us. We haven't been able to address the real problem, which is the pressure that the rivers are causing because they're plugged up on the lower ends. I'll give you one example and then our real request. Fred Meyer built a new store there a few years ago, and they are downstream from our major river, the Wilson River, just barely across the highway from it. That river is protected by a major dike, and that dike is showing signs of failure because our floods are getting worse and worse. It's staying underwater longer than it used to, and it's beginning to show percolation through the base. And if you're a dike person, that's a really bad sign. Directly across from that is Fred Meyer's parking lot and their front door. And I think the fourth page in that packet is a page of elevations. It shows Fred Meyer's front door 4.08 feet below the flood level inside those dikes. Now, if we lose 100 or 200 feet of that dike right across the road looking directly at Fred Meyer's parking lot, which is lower than the store, we don't know what will happen. We've asked our hydrologist, we've asked the Corps hydrologist, and they can't tell us if that wave is going to be a foot deep or 4 feet deep. And in light of the recent disaster in the world, we've been dealing with this steadily. We've done what we can do to it, but the real problem is we need to take the pressure off downstream. And so far, the permits we've applied for, we've been precluded from achieving a permit based on the overlapping, confusing, and contradictory rules. So, given the choice whether you proceed or don't proceed, I suppose we'd say we'd like to see this scrapped. What we would really like to see is either the state rely totally on federal 404 rules or get out of this process altogether and let the Corps of Engineers and the very definite rules the feds already have govern this. That's what we'd really like to see. And if we do go forward with a work group, we would like to have one of our professional advisors. I tried to read this 32 pages. I mean, it's impossible. It just complicates an already bad situation. So we'd like to have one of our professional advisors included, and certainly we'd like to have one of us included. And we do have a list of people that might be available. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You want to add anything, or are you going to pretty much reiterate, Mr. Rosen?
Well, again, I'm Clarence Boquist, and a retired dairyman in the county. I was born on the Kelchis River on that farm that I operated from 52 until last spring. Frankly, I had a problem reading this Bill 170, and I had to go to two men to help me out with it, and I came up with several things that I object to. My farm had one open ditch that drained six tile lines. It had a dike with a tide gate on it. I had two roads that I built myself, and each one of those options I would have to get a permit for if this goes into effect. The county is about 32,000 acres with at least 10,000 acres of converted wetland in it, which would be affected. And these rules and regulations would really hamper a lot of those people. I personally, if I was still farming, would resent the fact that I had to go to somebody, a state agency, and have the how, when, or why to tell me why I had to build those roads, because that's internal management. That's not a state management.
Okay.
And as far as the permit process is concerned, I got a problem with the permit process. My name is on a permit in front of DSL right now on the lower Kelchis River. Bud Ganger alongside of me and myself started this process 6 years ago. The first permit was canceled 2 years after we started, and it was a lot of it was our own fault because we did not know how to do it. The second time was being sponsored by this TBEIHID organization, and my name is still on the permit, and we still have not got the permit, and it affects about $30 million worth of dairies in the lower river. It started out at $0. There was seven of us dairymen who had the money and the equipment and the personnel to take care of this problem in the lower river so we get some relief from the floodwaters. And now that permit is going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we haven't got the money. So we're beat on both directions. It's just been a huge problem for us. And anyway, on this bill, I'm against it, period.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I just want to add a little, Bud Ganger again, and I appreciate your time. I've been farming since 1957. I graduated from Oregon State. And I farm right next to Bud Boquist between the Kelchis River and the Tillamook River with the Wilson in between. We have a big farm. And we've been farming. It's converted wetlands, about 1,000 acres, a lot of tideland and upland and everything. And we've diked it ourselves and drained it and made a very productive farm out of it. And now, like Bob Caravan, I've got a case against the Division of State Lands because I cleaned out a ditch for drainage purposes with tile, and it's costing me a hell of a lot of money to carry on with this suit. And all I did was an agriculture exemption, which is clear, and it really isn't right. I'm for throwing the bill out. Caravan has won his case, and I just think it would be terrible to start over from scratch and have to go back through. That's all. Thanks.
Okay. It sounds like we may just need to wait and see how the court rules. But anyway, I invite questions from the committee. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming all the way from Tillamook for your testimony. Just to the audience, I've got several other people signed up who haven't testified, but they're all opposed to, they're all against the bill. And I guess is what I'd like to do with the committee's suggestion is to bring back the DSL folks. Now that we've heard some of this side, and maybe I cut your cross-examination off, Senator Beyer, and I guess I'd like to give you the opportunity to continue. I'd like to hear their response to this testimony, in essence. Go ahead, Senator Atkinson.
Have all the citizens testify? So the only people left opposed are people in the lobby, is that right?
Well, let's see. There's Rudy Fink.
Yeah.
Do you want to come and testify? And there's a Jay McCauley. Okay, sorry. I need to step out for a minute. I will.
I'm Rudy Fink from Tillamook. I'm the chairman of Tillamook Soil and Water Board. I don't like some of the regulations. We have farm plans right now. We have to live with the federal regulations and state regulations. We have at least 150 farm plans. They check off issues with the related to wetland conversion and other issues with drainage. I have our biggest problem is with landowners of be able to explain to the Division of State Lands of converted wetlands or called ditches. Well, I run into that numerous times. I maybe should explain. I've been 22 years the board chairman of the Soil and Water Board. We run a lot of issues on the regulation. We can say exemption for farmland. If you know, Tillamook County gets 100 inches of rain. There's a lot of converted wetlands from non-agriculture practices. And I guess the other one is on cell temptation is, if you don't know, we have 90 miles of bank erosion in Tillamook County. If you look at some of the land that you can take a normal rainfall last week, 2 weeks ago, we had Wilson River flooding, Kilchers flooding. That main land erosion took acres and tons of waste and water sedimentation, which is very hard for the district to be able to work with agriculture or landowners. My harsh responsibilities of those issues is the permit process is just killing us. I mean, we just can't seem to get through the loops with these regulations of repairing and soil erosion. Biggest question I have, and a lot of landowners have asked me, if the state claims they own the bottom of the rivers, the side of the banks, and erosion, and the gravel bars, how come we don't have any help to protect the erosion? That's all I got.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions?
Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. By your testimony, I think you were opposed to the bill, but I wasn't exactly sure, so I would like to...
Well, I would like to leave it as the way it is right now. We work with agriculture, with farm practices, and I like to see it stay as the way it is now.
Okay.
We have enough loops to go through to try to get through the regulations, even what we got today. We don't need more. That's what I'm saying. I guess I should say this should relate it to Columbia and Lincoln County and Clatsop County. We all got converted wetlands, lots of it. And that's what I'm trying to get at.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Senator.
I don't want this question to seem insensitive at all, and it's a serious question.
Mm-hmm.
How much of the problem that you face is created by what you consider the regulation that gets in the way,
mm-hmm.
and how much is created by the forces of nature, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you are in a floodplain, you've drained wetlands, you're always going to have a certain set of givens, no matter what, you know. But are you saying that essentially if you could get some of the regulation out of the way, you'd be able to survive the floods a lot better or whatever?
I don't say get rid of the regulations. I think we need to work within the regulations.
Okay.
I mean, that's our biggest problem is we can't seem to get through the regulations to the district. I mean, with landowners. I mean, if you guys really want to work with landowners on those issues, I mean, it's. I have a lot of landowners ask me questions. It's pretty hard for me to relate unless I go through certain agencies. And that's one. That's a problem we have with that regulations. I just would, but we should just would leave it alone like we have now, within the farm plan, with the federal order, regulations. We can live with that. But changing then, I think we're just getting worse.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you could have Sean Lilly and Ann Hannes come back, that would be great. If I could just ask a question, then I'll let you continue. I mean, my kind of an open-ended question is I'd just like to hear your response to the last hour's worth of testimony.
A couple comments I'd like to say. What we're not proposing to add more regulation. What we're proposing to do is to be more consistent with the federal exemption. So, and we're not proposing to remove to say that we're no longer farmers will no longer have exemptions. We're trying to make it so that it's more consistent and easier for farmers to know what they need to do. So from that standpoint, we're still more than willing to sit down with farmers and anyone else who's interested in the bill and talk through the different issues and see what lines up or what their specific concerns are. Because I think sometimes it takes going through examples or specific situations.
Just the one specific example. I mean, there's lots of little things, but the specific example of the exemption for the 50 cubic yards.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, I don't. I'm totally new to this issue, but it sounds to me like right now there's an exemption. If they want to remove up to 50 cubic yards, they can. And under the bill, that exemption would be removed, so then they would need to get a permit in order to do that.
Under the current state removal fill law, there is an exemption for 50 cubic yards. However, in essential salmonid habitat streams, and John, how many miles are there?
25,000 miles.
There are 25,000 miles of essential salmonid habitat streams. In those essential salmonid habitat streams, the exemption is only 1 cubic yard. So, and under federal law, there is no 50 cubic yard exemption. So, as a farmer has to comply with federal law where there is no 50 cubic yard exemption.
And if a stream is not considered essential salmonid habitat, then that exemption does apply.
Correct.
How many of those waterways are there that are not essential salmonids?
No.
How do you say that word?
Salmonid
habitat.
By some people's count, there's up to 110,000 miles of named streams in the state. So, fully
110,000 miles what?
Of named streams in the state. So clearly, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 25% of those are essential habitat designated, and these are reaches of streams that are inhabited by for spawning and rearing of. State or federally listed anadromous fish, salmonid fish.
So let's just say it is 25-75%, that 25% is salmonid habitat. At least for the other 75% of the streams, though, that would represent a change for the ag community where currently they don't need a permit because if it's 50 cubic yards.
Yeah.
At least for that portion of the streams, this is a further restriction on them.
Mr. Chair, on its face, that's right. But in fact, that's not the way the bill is constructed. And I appreciate that the difficulty that some of the folks giving testimony had in parsing their way through the bill. It's not easy. I fully admit that. What we've tried to do is look at bring state law into some consistency with federal law. So directly to your point, the 50-yard exemption would be removed under this bill, but many exemptions for activities commonly undertaken by farmers and ranchers on agricultural land would be exempt specifically. And so, in addition, in our view, in the event that there were activities that on farm and ranch land that needed to be regulated because they didn't fall under one of those exemptions, then we're proposing that there would be the ability to put in place a no-application general authorization type of permit that we would work with the agricultural community to put in place. This is not unusual. It's very similar to a Corps of Engineers nationwide type permit. And given the great amount of work that the department has done and the organizations such as the Farm Bureau and others have done with us, we think that we've got something of a synergy where we could be able to get the word out as to how those no-notice permits could be used, and particularly the practices that they would fall under could be well noticed to the people.
Okay. When do you expect a decision on the court case?
I honestly don't know. It's in the Court of Appeals, so whenever it gets out of Court of Appeals, I don't think they're just discussions of briefing going back and forth. But
have you had oral arguments yet?
No, they haven't had oral arguments yet.
Okay. Thank you. Any committee?
Mr. Chair, I guess before I go any further, I've got a lot of technical questions about the bill, and if you're going to do a work group, I think it's probably more appropriate spot to get those questions answered, looking at the essence of time. If you're not going to do a work group, then I guess it doesn't really matter that much. So,
I guess I'd like to hear Greg Eddington. Where are you? Could you just come up here for a minute, please? Why don't you identify yourself?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Greg Addington with the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Do you see value somewhere in this bill such that a work group would be useful?
Mr. Chair, I think in what you've seen here in the testimony is that there are significant differences in interpretation of current state statute. And I'm not sure a consensus could be reached in a work group. This bill, and I would also say that I do think that the department is trying to simplify things, but I think it's also clear from the people you've heard here that this bill hasn't done it to this point.
Yeah, but I mean, to all due respect to the people here, I'm wondering whether they are eight angry people or so, or where they represent the broad interests of the Farm Bureau and the agricultural community, and that's why I'm asking you, I mean, in your capacity as with the Farm Bureau, whether you see this as something that the differences are so different or are so far apart that it just doesn't make sense to put a work group together. Maybe you think the status quo is fine.
Mr. Chair, the message that I get loud and clear from the rank and file in my membership is that they would prefer the status quo.
Okay.
Senator Atkins? Maybe I can ask it another way, both the department and the Farm Bureau. If we just lived under the federal law in Oregon with the federal definitions of agriculture exemptions, would your members be happy? That's a question to Farm Bureau. And to DSL, why can't we just live under the federal law?
Chair Ringo, Senator Atkinson, my answer to that question from the people I talk to is yes, we would be happy with the federal minimums.
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, I think you asked, could the department live with the federal exemptions? Fundamentally, and I would say that's what we've had in mind when we drafted this bill. There are some minor differences. I think what we would prefer, the short answer is yes, with some caveats. And I think maybe that's where a work group might be beneficial, so that there's a clear understanding of what those differences, those minor differences are. For example, the bill as drafted extends agricultural exemptions in many cases over lands zoned exclusive farm use. That's what the state law says. The federal government, of course, has no similar recognition for exclusive farm use zoned land. So that's a fundamental difference between the way we're applying would apply these exemptions in Oregon versus federal law. And I just offer that as information as to how this bill would apply.
Well, I'm not going to convene a work group. I'll leave it to you two to decide if you want to get together and try to put something together. It's my sense that if both sides of this think they're going to win the court case, then they're not going to be willing to concede very much in negotiations, and maybe we need to wait and see what the Court of Appeals does, and then we'll know the lay of the land in that regard. So I'm going to leave it at that. If you want to come and talk to me further and say that this is worth pursuing, that's fine, but I'm not going to appoint a work group. And I guess I intend to go ahead and adjourn if there's nothing else from this committee.
Go ahead. I would suggest, since I did this myself and in my committee, is if you want to put over the other bills to tomorrow, that you can do that without re-noticing them.
Well, Senator Burdick, we handled the bills.
All three of them?
That we did.
Gracious.
Well,
efficient committee.
One was efficient. The others we pushed off. Anything else from the committee? Okay. Thanks very much for all your input today. It's been an interesting hearing, and it's closed.